The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Joining me for the Thursday interview this week on The Hard Shoulder, I'm delighted to say, is, we must give you your proper title, Dr. Robbie Lawler. Officially, for the last couple of weeks?
Officially, Dr. Robbie Lawler. I've been insufferable the last few weeks, I have to say.
Dr. Robbie Lawler is well known to many of you. He is co-host of the Pos Vibe podcast. That's maybe where you've listened to him. You might have seen him on the Tommy Tiernan show or elsewhere. HIV activist as well. I mean, the podcast, if we start there, it very much wears its intentions on its sleeve, I guess, in terms of the title. Are you naturally a positive person?
Well, I'm HIV positive, so that helps with it. But no, I am. I love life. I love people. Living with HIV, I got to meet so many other people that I wouldn't have normally. Do you know, other people living with HIV from all walks of life, from everywhere around the world to people just down the street from me, you know? And I always say it's kind of a blessing in disguise, because when you get to meet these people, hear their stories and see them killing and thriving in life, it just makes me so happy.
And I mean, to get to that point, the point you're at today, say, with that attitude, how big a journey was that?
Oh, well, that's a bigger question, right? that was tricky, I have to say, because when I got diagnosed, I didn't know HIV was in Ireland. I didn't know it existed in Ireland. I didn't know one person living with HIV in Ireland. And it's a really scary, isolating thing to go through, right? I didn't know there was a template of how to thrive with HIV. Like, how do you tell someone you're dating? Or will anyone ever want to touch you or love you again? These are really scary things. Or I have to start taking this medication every day for the rest of my life. Is that tricky? What happens if I miss it once or twice a week? Like, do you know what happens then? So all these questions were there, but I felt like I had absolutely no one to talk to or to look up to. And that was really scary. And that was only 2012. And it kind of just indicates the level of stigma, doesn't it? There are thousands and thousands and thousands of people of all genders and sexualities living with HIV, but not one person I knew was out about their status. It just shows you how scary people thought Ireland is to come out about status, because they think they're going to be stigmatized or discriminated or rejected by friends, family, dates, by their kids, or their kids are going to be rejected by their parents. Mm. So it's just such a hard thing to navigate by yourself. When I started reaching out to other people living with HIV, I started hearing all their instances of stigma and how they felt about themselves living with HIV. And I just said, enough is enough. No longer should we live in silence living with HIV and STI. Like, come on, it's 2012 or 13 then. Medication is so good medically. It's so good to live with HIV medically, if I can say that. Mm. Because let me tell you the good news. It's one pill a day. I'm on my sixth option because, you know, like with any kind of treatment, you find the right one for you.
Yeah.
We have so many different options in Ireland. So I'm on my sixth option. It's like taking a Tic Tac. It freshens my breath. It stops HIV from replicating in my body. HIV is asleep in my body. So that means it doesn't affect my immune system. My immune system is just like yours, Kieran. I will live as long as anyone else. And the virus is just so much asleep in my body that I can't pass on HIV sexually. The risk is an absolute zero. I'm with my partner 10 years now. He's HIV negative. We don't even need to wear condoms in our relationship. What's so funny about today is, actually, the safest person to have sex with, not to get HIV, is someone who lives with HIV, who knows their status and is on a treatment and has HIV asleep in the body to what we call undetectable levels, makes them untransmittable. So that's the reality of what it is to live with HIV. But yet, society, for some reason, is trying to tell us that we're less, we're unlovable, and that we should stay silent. And for the last, I don't know, like 12 years of my life, I'm like, time, medicine has changed, science has changed, great time society has changed too.
And where do you think that comes from, that stigma? Or why do you think still is it a kind of a latent homophobia, like a hangover of that still kind of lingers on? Is it a fear of the unknown? Maybe because so few people talk about it openly, that there's a kind of an element of the unknown and everybody has this natural fear of it. I mean, what do you think it
You hit many nails in the head. No, people have done PhDs after PhDs on this, yeah. Right? So it's so alert. But maybe if I can talk to some of these. There has been, people have hang-ups around sex and drug use in this country, right? It's criminalised a lot of the time. It's shamed. So if you get an STI, you are caught having the bad sex, right? And there's this huge moralisation around condoms use, right? And condoms are very good at protecting against STIs. But like, how many people do you know who's practiced safe sex 100% of the time? Like, you go and you go into a shop without a mask once, you could get COVID. That doesn't make you less of a person. It just makes you human, right? So we have to get off our high horse. That's the first thing I'll say about that. Secondly is, there is a lack of education. And there's a legacy of AIDS, which wiped out communities, or wiped out drug-using communities in, you know, inner city Dublin. It wiped out so many people in the LGBT communities, queer men specifically. And that trauma has a legacy. And it's fair, and at that time, homophobia was rife. It was criminal to be gay until 1993. And when HIV treatment came on the market in 1996, people stopped talking about HIV. They just stopped talking about it. We stopped talking about it in school. The government stopped doing campaigns about it.
We don't need to do this anymore. We've got that sorted. Type
exactly.
thing.
People aren't going to die of AIDS anymore, so let's stop. But now HIV rates are increasing. There's this weird silence about it. And yet homophobia, shame around sex, the community have this trauma legacy. You can imagine how much is tied up in this. And also, we're talking, it's Pride Month. Happy Pride Month, by
yes,
the way.
But
I know so many women living with HIV in this country. Can we just give a shout out?
Sorry, that's
them?
Actually a really great point, because even in my mind, when you ask, you know, if someone were to say the words HIV, it's just the image that conjured up is a man.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? It's just, it's kind of a cultural thing, I guess.
It's a cultural thing, it's a representation thing. Now, we know there's so many women living with HIV and they just get it through unprotected sex again. Why is it that we have so few women who feel that it's safe in Ireland to come out about their status? So this is another thing about sex and shame. The women are supposed to be, you know, non-sexual and non-quote-unquote promiscuous, and if they have sex and get HIV, well, then they're stained or something, you know? And that's still this weird thing today. Or how could you be a proper mother if they got HIV, blah, 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 blah. As a side note, I should also say, people living with HIV, we can have children without fear of passing on HIV as well. So yes, there's this huge contingent who still feel that unsafe to come out about the status. However, recently on the Positive Eye podcast, an amazing young nurse, she got HIV when she was 23, came out about her status in Ireland. She's from Galway. She's killer. She's amazing. And I think she's going to be a domino effect. More women are feeling more and more empowered to come out about their status. I say, watch this space. We're going to hear a lot more from women very soon.
And is there a latent homophobia despite everything?
Oh, of course there is. And let's just bring it back to the marriage equality referendum, okay? I think, was it like 62 or 64% said yes? But like, that's 38 that said no to marriage equality. And I know so many people whose parents said to them, I'm not going to vote because I don't want to vote yes because it's against my beliefs, but I don't want to vote no because you're my child. So imagine hearing that. And just this happened all around the country. I heard it from so many of my friends, and then they get HIV. The last thing that they want to tell their parents is, I got this health condition, because you're saying you got that because you're gay. You know, it's kind of almost confirming all of their fears growing up, when actually they just got it because it's a virus going around. We haven't got a handle on it. We don't have enough prevention methods out there for HIV. STI clinics were closed for 2 years over COVID. There's so many different reasons why HIV is still going around this country. It's not because people are gay. And homophobia is one of the reasons why people still hold the secret in.
Yeah. It's funny, like so many of those, the overlapping element to each of those kind of hang-ups that feed into the stigma is sex, you know, and the kind of lingering cultural attitudes that we have to sex and the differences in attitudes of men and women and all
it's
of that, isn't it?
It's a weird thing, isn't it? So what we know is, like, people are having more and more sex, right? We have these dating apps. It's easier to have sex now more than ever. And there's this sex positivity movement, but also there's this silence around it, okay? And this is really concerning when we talk about STIs. Last year, we had more STIs than ever. Chlamydia, we had around 11,000 cases. And 50% of those chlamydia cases were in the age group of 15 to 24-year-olds. And the majority of people who got chlamydia are young women. Okay, so we know people are having lots and lots of sex at a young age, but they're not being informed. They don't know how easily treatable chlamydia is. They don't know that you can be asymptomatic for chlamydia or HIV or gonorrhea, and just to get tested as a normal everyday part of life. So there's all these messages that we need to get through, but there's just this real, although sex positivity happened in the country, there's this little weird silence and shame around it that we're trying to just get through, just to get the proper messaging in.
Yeah, but I wondered, is that a thing that just takes time to change, that everybody's a product of their environment, and like, you know, there's entire generations of people out there who didn't grow up with sex positivity as kind of part and parcel of everyday life, or dating apps, or kind of just accepting the reality of promiscuity and it not coming with hang-ups or being a bad thing. You know, and those people haven't gone anywhere. They're still there, and it's maybe it's expecting too much that they would all kind of overnight be like, you know what, actually I'm cool with all this.
It's a generational thing. You're 100% right. That's why I kind of made this analogy. I was trying to like get through this force field of sex negativity, because when I go in and give a sexual health talks to students, they want to hear this because they know that this really directly affects them. And now they know that they can get at-home testing kits, so they don't even need to go to your local sexual health clinic. You can get a free STI test to your home, self-swab. You put it into a post as sh24.ie and you get your results sent by text within a week. So it's this, science is catching up, you know, and testing is easier now more than ever. It's just to be able to give the information to these young people when STI rates are and all high, that testing, protection and then treatment are really great tools that they could that they need to enhance or optimize their sexual health. So yes, we're getting there. We're almost there. We have the tools. Now it's just making sure the messages get out there.
And in with the podcast, again, to go back to that point and the focus on positivity and not necessarily in the medical sense, but you know, in the broader sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that, in your mind, is it kind of more necessary than ever, given how much of our kind of interactions happen online and how they can lend itself, that space, to negativity?
Okay, so this is more an existential question, I think. But look, you're right. The reason why we love a pause vibes is because there's always this connotation of HIV, a negative thing. It's shameful. You know, there should be secrecy around it. And what we really try to do is one, pause. People live major via generally colloquially called pause, but positive vibes, as in by humanizing experiences, we're taking out the taboo from the shadows and we're just saying, we're just normal people trying to get on with life. Or so what if I'm gay? I'm with my partner for 10 years, or I'm happy just staying with my dog for my life. I want to be a spinster and that's okay too. We need not just positivity, but humanity to be showing. And I think that's really where I think, you know, this Homie Tiernan show does really well. I think about your show does really well. And I think what Pause Vibe does really well is just bringing these stories and these people to the forefront and removing and highlighting what negativity can really do to our lives. We say that we like to have spill the tea, which is drag for truth, but we say tea is for trauma, because people have spit at us, or they reject us on dates, or, you know, the doctor doesn't want to see you because you live with HIV. They're very much pervasive still.
So does that happen still?
Yes. So RCSI done a recent survey among healthcare workers, and we still see that stigma in the healthcare setting is rife. It is still rife. People double glove. They have lack of education. I was with a doctor when I first got diagnosed with HIV, and all his doctor friends were saying, what are you doing with Robbie? He's a risk to your future. Which is just completely uneducated, because they're uneducated even in university or outside of university. So when we talk about larger society needing to be educated, this includes the medical field.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's humanizing the experiences, showing what stigma does to us. But what we're doing is creating this like army of activists saying, actually, no longer do we just should be in the closet, the viral closet that we like to say. We want you to get tested, to know your status, to get on treatments, not be able to pass on HIV. And there we go. We will have no new HIV infections, and people living with HIV should be out there to live and to love just like anyone else. That's our clear message.
And, you know, yesterday on the show, I was speaking to Mambobo Ogoro, who's a new colleague of ours here and has a new show called Unify. And it's kind of about diversity and inclusion and things. And it just, there's an overlap in the point you make, because she was talking about how, you know, one dimensional we view people from other kind of maybe ethnic backgrounds. And a big kind of aim or goal she has with this show is that we don't just see them in the prism of being an immigrant or being Pakistani or being black or whatever it happened to be, that actually they're a person who's worried about paying the mortgage next month and is kind of run ragged, bringing the kids to kind of hurling training and camogie and soccer or whatever it happens to be. And a bit of that, it's kind of an overlap. It struck a chord. It resonated what you were saying there, that sometimes maybe, and you tell me, is there still this thing of once you've got the diagnosis, it's like, you know, as you say, kind of the pause community, that's all you are. In some people's minds, oh God, he's the HIV positive one.
Yeah, I know. I'm the poster boy for an STI. My man's delighted with me. No, listen, there's so much I want to say to that, but let's just talk to the human point of it. I give peer support to people living with HIV, so they just get diagnosed or having trying to find it hard to navigate living with HIV. So I meet up with them, and the first 2 days, once they can actually just talk about HIV, that's it. And then they talk about how crap their boyfriend is, how much they hate their job, you know, as you were saying, how they give out about how the rent is and all of that. So it is, we're just human. And then we get on with life again. Then we just get a partner, have kids, buy a house, or we don't do any of that, you know. And that's just it, because we're not just one type of people. We're we're not homogenous. We're as diverse as people are diverse. We just happen to live with a chronic health condition. It's like trying to say everyone with diabetes is the same.
Yeah, which is a good point to make, actually. Yeah, we wouldn't think of it.
And can I make that point?
Go on.
Because racism is so rife here. I know so many people who love to come out about their status, but they're afraid of racist backlash, okay? Can I just say why we have...
Sorry, they're afraid to come out about their HIV status. Yeah. Because they're of an ethnic minority and they think that could be the focus of attack.
People think, oh, look, we have people trying to bring in HIV to our country. When that's
I see what
you
mean.
And the thing is, it's like a lot of it is maybe transference of care. They come here, start medication, they can't pass it on, you know, just get on with life. That's great. But we had access to medicines in Ireland in 1996. High-income countries did. Between 1996 to 2006, sub-Saharan Africa didn't get access to any of the treatment. Pharma wouldn't allow cheaper medicines in. Mm. And because of that, 12 million people died needlessly of AIDS, purely because of corporate greed. And because we couldn't get people to have access to treatment, to not pass on HIV to their kids or to their sexual partners, HIV is still such a big issue in sub-Saharan Africa. One person dies every minute of AIDS still, even though I'm on my sixth option of HIV treatment, but my friends in Zimbabwe, Uganda, that's a pipe dream for them. Even now, they've only access to a few, and some of them still have really bad side effects. So when we think about it, we benefit so much from the pharmaceutical industry here in Ireland, so much. And yet we're here giving out about people trying to make a better life themselves, have good access to treatment that we deny them in the Global South. We see it with COVID-19, we see it with Mpox, we're going to see it with avian flu when it comes back. This is time and time again. So think more critically, all you racists out there. That's what I want to say. And it's a really strong point, because I really feel for all my friends who came to make Ireland a home, just wants to take the treatment and just wants to get on with their lives. They don't need that racist.
And that's the focus. That was the focus of your research, the PhD, wasn't it?
So my PhD was based in Ukraine. So basically, I looked at how HIV and hepatitis C treatment activists in Ukraine reduced the price of medicines. So I'm really interested in middle-income countries, right? Because thanks to activism, we got low-income countries access to cheaper generic medicines.
Yeah.
And so that was the Global North and Global South activism coming together. But middle-income countries, because they're over a certain financial threshold, they don't get access to generic medicines so well. So they're like hotbeds of treatment activism. So I really wanted to know, in Ukraine, how they reduce the price of medicines, because in 2011, people had to die of AIDS for someone else to get onto their medication. It was completely sparse. And this is when in Ireland, when anyone got access to treatment. And up until 2020, any single person who got HIV diagnosis could start HIV treatment straight away. And there's a cure for hepatitis C now. And it's an amazing drug, 12 weeks of treatment, forced these interferon treatments, that was horrible. And Ukraine, 3.5% of the population, 2.5% of the population live with hepatitis C. Huge proportion, but yet they couldn't get access to this cure. So what they done was amazing. It was the ingenious of it all, but they were well-resourced. And what we're seeing is this closing space on international funders giving funding to action against intellectual property rights.
Yeah.
Today, Kieran, I'm so sad to say that the MSF, Medicines Sans Frontières, they just closed their access campaign. The whole department, and that has been instrumental in making sure that so many people in the Global South have access to HIV treatment and other treatments. So it just kind of shows you where we're going in terms of access to medicines. It's a closing space when we need it now more than ever.
All right, listen, you made the case well. Robbie, it's been a real pleasure, and thanks a million for joining us. Happy Pride, as you said right at the outset. Dr. Robbie Lawler, always give him his proper title, co-host of the Pause Vibe podcast. Robbie, once again, thank you very, very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.